Folie à Dieu. Written by Lea Rizel and read by Devil with a Bird Dress. Summary. Who decided that letting Cheyenne and Tobias in the same room was a good idea? Why do I even have a door? Jack asks, rubbing at his temples as Tobias strides into the room, pulling his little suitcase behind him. Somehow, it always looks like a robot on a leash, or one of those toys for toddlers that makes annoying noises. The boys had one of those. They used to fight over it, and that drove him almost as crazy as the annoying popcorn noises. Jack hadn't even known Tobias was coming back from Paris. But then, everyone in both ballet companies seems to treat transatlantic flights like a quick jaunt to the next borough for a good burrito these days. No wonder the world is cooking in its own juices. It's not like anyone ever actually knocks, or acknowledges that it's closed, or that this is my office and not Grand Central Station. I should just have it removed so everyone can walk right in. That would make things easier, Cheyenne says from where she's been folded origami style on the expensive and porous chair she's claimed is hers. It's a lost cause. He doesn't even bother to have it fumigated anymore. We could get you one of those remote locks so you can lock and unlock it whenever you like, Nicholas suggests. Like Harvey Weinstein? Marie looks horrified, but it's a pretty good idea, Jack thinks. Without acknowledging any of them, of course, Tobias plops down on the ottoman right in front of Cheyenne and pulls his headphones down to rest around his neck. I had a vision on the plane, he announces as though he's continuing a conversation they were already having and not like he had just arrived back in the country for the first time in months. What a freak. Cheyenne is a freak too, so she leans towards him, eyes narrowed. A vision? Tell me of this vision. A full-length ballet. Original music commissioned from whoever. He dismisses that consideration like music is incidental, like the composer isn't key to whatever ballet ends up being, like a goddamn commission isn't the most expensive part of creating a new ballet. Not that Byrne guy. He's way too desperate. That's fine for Broadway, but I can't work with that sort of thing. I'm not going to hold anyone's hand. Tobias, what the fuck are you talking about? Jack says, wishing he had some antacids, or something stronger, in his pockets. He's pretty sure he's getting ulcers. Did any of the Macmillan men die of bursting ulcers? He can't remember, but the story easily could have gotten lost among the others. We have not discussed this. This is not part of the plan. Original music? God help him. Cheyenne sounds intrigued. Well, obviously. It would have to be. I'm thinking a pared-down core, something small and intimate, or maybe the entire company. Did we ever figure out whether we could fit them all on the stage? We definitely cannot fit them all on the stage, Tobias, Jack says. But of course, no one is listening to him. New costumes, too. Something vaguely historical, without going full pastiche. Epaulettes, maybe. How do you feel about dancing in epaulettes? I can dance in anything, but I do not like the fringe bouncing around and around. It swishes like the flies and distracts from my face. Maybe not epaulettes. Fringe isn't necessary. We'll go with what suits you. The whole thing is built around you. Of course it is. Cheyenne sounds like she never doubted it for a moment. Listen, we do not have enough room in the budget to create an entire new ballet right now, Jack interjects. We're going to be reusing the costumes from Ongine this season anyway, and Tobias ignores him, of course. Actually, Jack is beginning to suspect that it's less ignoring than it is that Tobias literally does not hear anything that's said to him by anyone he hasn't decided to acknowledge exists for the 4.5 minutes his attention can be focused on another human being. Right now, Cheyenne is clearly the only other person in the room as far as he's concerned. We debut it next season, Tobias says, which is objectively insane. Cheyenne arches a brow, leaning even closer to him. Their faces are less than a foot apart. If Jack hadn't seen it himself, he wouldn't have believed that anyone could get that close to Tobias without him spontaneously busting out of sheer discomfort. The concept, she says. Jack can't see Tobias's expression, because, of course, he's sitting right in front of him with his back to him. but he can hear the smugness in his voice when he announces, "La Mupan." And he can see, clear as anything, the smirk that spreads across Cheyenne's face. This cannot be good. "La Mupan," she echoes, that smirk spreading into a terrifying grin. "La Mupan." The satisfaction, the relish in her voice, is even scarier than the grin. "What the fuck is a La Mupan?" Jack asks, because honestly, what the fuck is a La Mupan? Nicholas shrugs, and even Marie doesn't look like she has any idea. Cheyenne doesn't look over at him as she answers. She's still staring into Tobias's face like the two of them are trying to hypnotize each other.
"Julie d'Aubigny de Maupin was a 17th century French opera singer, a legend on stage and off, a woman of her time and for all time, one of the great lovers of the era. She seduced men, she seduced women, she was a lover to the rich and powerful. Campra composed Florentine and Tancreda just for her. She mastered fencing as a child and fought in duels against many men. She won them all. She wore men's clothing because it was more comfortable. She was immortalized in song and in novels. After she ran away from her husband with her lover, she sang in taverns and performed fencing exhibitions to survive. She seduced a young woman whose parents sent her to a convent to get her away from La Maupin. La Maupin then joined the convent as a postulant in order to help her lover escape and faked the lover's death by putting another dead nun's body in her bed and setting the room on fire."
"Good Lord," Nicholas interjects, "the staging."
"She was charged in absentia as a male with kidnapping, body snatching, arson, and failing to appear before the tribunal. She was sentenced to death, but was never caught. The Opera de Paris at first refused her, but could not withstand the power of her voice. The Marquis de Dangeau said she had the most beautiful voice in the world. She defeated another singer in a duel after he insulted the other women of the opera. After her final lover, a woman, died, she fled the opera and died in another convent in her 30s. My mother raised me on tales of her exploits."
She takes a long, deep breath and tilts her head back, giving the impression that she spread her arms wide without moving them at all.
"She lived."
A long, reverent pause follows Cheyenne's words. "Well, fuck." That does sound like the perfect role for Cheyenne. But there's the fucking budget. "Well, that sounds guaranteed to get us boycotted by the Christians," Marie says finally. "The Catholics do love a boycott. They boycotted us back in 91 when we were performing," Nicholas starts, but Cheyenne does not let him finish.
"We will do this," she says to Tobias.
Their faces are still inches away from each other. It's kind of creepy, honestly. Who thought putting these two in the same room was a good idea?
"We will create it together."
No you won't," Jack says. "Do you have any idea how expensive that would be?"
"The audiences will clamor to see me originate such a role," Cheyenne says. "I will sell more tickets than the Nutcracker. It will go down in history as one of the great roles of all time, and my performance as unparalleled."
"Boycotts do always end up selling more tickets," Marie points out. Streisand effect. "Ah, Babs," Nicholas sighs in that tone. "We spent a marvelous night together in 83. Roma, Roma."
"It will be the highlight of the coming season," Cheyenne says.
Still staring, by the way. "You don't even know who you want to compose it yet," Jack says. "The music does not exist." Where the hell would they find a composer insane enough to work with those two anyway? There's no way in hell it would be ready by then, and there's no budget.
"We begin," Cheyenne announces,
and rises from the poor, beleaguered chair. Even just standing up in an office on a Tuesday morning in ragged, stinky sweats, she looks like Odette rising off a lake. She leaves damp patches behind on the fabric, and thank God Marie is already passing a double whiskey to him. He throws it back like a shot.
"Good,"
Tobias says, popping up, too.
No!
Jack shouts, handing the empty cup back to Marie and gesturing for a refill. Come back here! Right now, Cheyenne! I did not agree to any of this! There's no time! There's no money! I run this theater! But they're already out the door. He really is going to install one of those remote locks. End. Thank you for listening.